The Morning Rush podcast is brought to you by Bud Light. Stock up with Bud Light for game days and check out Budweiser's limited edition Freedom Reserve. Please drink responsibly.
They're going to run and get that boost.
This game's still alive and the Hawks have a first down.
Who wants to talk football?
It's Ronnie Wingo, number 20. Touchdown, Arkansas.
They talk the bar.
This is the Bud Light Morning Rush podcast.
It's nice to react to other people's college football games, and I know that you probably enjoyed the bye week, Tommy. I know I certainly did. It was nice to just have a, I wouldn't say like a vacation week, but it was just nice have a week to where you didn't have to worry about doing pre-games, post-games, and all this stuff. It's nice to just sit back and spectate and watch college football.
It was fun to be a fan
this
weekend. You're exactly right. Got to do nothing, no schedule, no hassle, no got to be somewhere at a certain time. Just enjoy football. Like a normal football fan. Yeah, that was great this weekend.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to tell you, the Big 12 games were the best of all, right?
Yeah.
Now, I'm not as big a fan. Some people think because you got a game that scores 100 points, but that's great football. I don't know if that's great football, but it was exciting football. I'll grant you it's exciting. I don't know if it's great, but, boy, the Big 12 had some great games. The SEC games that we spent all week long talking about were...
Yeah.
I mean, they were what I expected. I just didn't think Kentucky can handle the moment. They didn't.
Nope.
And Bama, hey, LSU's a good football team. There is a good football team coming in to Fayetteville on Saturday night. We'll talk about that. Bama's just better. I don't know how anyone, John's going to, when Bama wants to, and we saw that Saturday because Saban talked about it after the game. They want to make a statement, as he said. When they want to, I don't know how anyone's going to stay within 10 of these guys. And LSU's not the best balanced off. I mean, Clemson could probably put up a better challenge as far as balanced offense.
But 0 points? Zero goose egg?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying
where's
that.
Where's LSU going? I mean, we've known that LSU didn't have this high-powered offense all along. It's been better. Than what they've had, but still not great.
But 0 points? That I think that was just what was surprising to me, was just no points.
Does it say more about LSU and their offense and the lack of, or Alabama and the ability to defensively?
I think it's Alabama and the ability to, also having 2 weeks to prepare. I think that was a big factor into it. And I do think Nick Saban saying we wanted to make a statement, I think that that's exactly what they wanted to do across the board as a coaching staff. They're like, you know what? We're undefeated. We're blowing teams out. People talk about our schedule and how it's not that difficult. They talk about the defense and how it's not that good because we're giving up all these points for compared to previous years. I think it was literally we're going to go in and we are going to send a message to the world, to everyone watching, which you know any college football fan was watching that game. We're going to let everybody know this. All the criticisms you have, they're non-existent. You don't have any arguments. We're the best team in the country. And they prove that. I mean, that's what makes it scary is because they can do that. They can go into...
Can flip a switch.
They can go into arguably the craziest, loudest atmosphere that you'll see in college football, which if all you that watch the game, obviously you can't get all of it from television, but you could tell it was a fever pitch atmosphere.
Listen, early in that game where you had some illegal procedure, false start penalties, and the wing officials, the line of scrimmage officials were coming in, blowing their whistle, waving their arms to stop, and nobody knew it. You could not hear the whistle on the field.
It's almost how Tua got hurt.
That's exactly right, when he got hit in the knee. I mean, that's how loud it was on that field, is you couldn't hear someone showering down, pounding down on a whistle to stop the play. And you knew it was real because the referee that was in the middle of the field, the white hat, he couldn't hear it either. I mean, it was just, that's as loud as it was going to get. And when Alabama, now they didn't score early, but they moved the ball early. The penalty set them back, but you knew when they absorbed that, when they withstood that early barrage, because LSU couldn't keep that up, that it was going to be a long night for LSU.
What was it, the first opening drive for Alabama offense that did not result in a touchdown all season long?
I think in 8 games,
Yeah, so I mean, they always had that expectation, and that's what basically what I'm saying, though, is with that going into that atmosphere and all that, Alabama going in and shutting out that home team, beating them 29-0, knowing what was on the line, knowing that they had 2 weeks to prepare too. against a team that, would you say, LSU is across the board is probably the closest as far as NFL talent, high caliber talent that Alabama has seen so far this year. Maybe we'll even see all year long unless they play Clemson. I know Clemson's got a few guys too.
Well,
but for them just to go in there and dominate the way they did, it's just it's a scary thing, because when they want to do it, man, they can do it.
Yeah. Just tells you where their program's at. Remember the graphic that Gary Danielson put up during the game that talked about first-round draft picks by position? And in the last 10 drafts, Alabama has had a player drafted at every position on the field except quarterback.
In the first round.
In the first round. I mean, that just tells you where that program is at. No, I don't even need to do the research to tell you nobody else can touch that. I don't know that, but I'm gonna put all my I believe what I'm saying to be true. Nobody else can say that.
No. Brett Bielema can't go in and say, I have more players drafted than Nick Saban. So, because, I mean, that's...
I don't think Clemson or LSU or... I mean, who else could say that in the last 10 years they've had a player drafted at 21 of the 22 positions? And, oh, by the way, the one is quarterback, and we'll solve that as soon as Tua goes in the draft, because he's definitely going in the first round.
You get one more year of him, too. Yippee.
Right, in a big couple years. But that problem will be solved in, I guess, two drafts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, but I don't think any team can come close to it.
You know, and they've had multiple first-rounders at several of those positions. It's not like they've only had 21 first-rounders in 10 years. But think about that from the balance. I mean, that just, to me, was like, whoa. I mean, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it really reaffirms the deal that how dominant they are as a college football program. When you see something like that, and like you said, Tommy, it shows where they're at, but it also shows just how far behind everyone else is.
Yes, but it just shows you how far advanced Saban's process is with recruiting and development.
Yep. And here's the thing, too, because
they're able to go find the best right guard or center or defensive left tackle in the country, you know.
Right. Well, I was even talking to some friends about this, too. It's like, you think about that, go back to 2009, their very first national championship at Alabama, and that team that was so good defensively, especially. And look at their team now. They're night and day as far as what the team looks like, how the team's set up, what the philosophies are, what offensively, defense, everything's different. And that's, to me, the most incredible thing is not only, of course, the dominance and all that, but just how they changed pretty much both sides of the ball as far as how they approach the game over the past 10 years, and they're still just as dominant, if not more so, than they were back then.
And you know what else impresses me more with Saban? He does it pretty much with a different coordinator every year. One side of the ball or the other, and sometimes both, he's got to get a new defensive coordinator, a new offensive coordinator. Maybe the defensive coordinator's not as big a deal, but I still think it is a big deal, but it's not as big a deal as the offensive coordinator. But they just keep on trucking.
Mm-hmm.
They just keep on rolling down the road. It just, and no other program could even withstand that part of it. I mean, we saw Brett Bielema struggle at Arkansas for a lot of reasons, but one of them being replacing coordinators far too frequently. And I think programs that have that lack of stability with the heads of their coaching staffs generally have some heartburn from that. Not in Tuscaloosa.
They treat assistant coaches and coordinators like they do their players. They don't rebuild, they reload.
Yeah.
And
on part of it, so they have so many analysts and people.
Right.
I mean, Butch Jones has got a lot of publicity for being a fired head coach. But you know, they've got a system there where if a coordinator leaves, they've got a farm system, more or less, with all these analysts. And, yeah, they may leave there and go work somewhere else, but they know enough about each other to come back and work together.
Well, if you think about it, there was that one point in time where you had Lane Kiffin and Steve Sarkisian on their staff, two guys who were head coaches, who were very successful offensive coordinators, and they were on their staff. And then you mentioned, you know, Dan Enos being over there now. And, you know,
he's not even the coordinator.
No, he's not even the coordinator. And that's what I'm saying. So it's almost like to go and work for Bama. You could be a head coach at a smaller program and very successful, but then you go to Bama and you're like, okay, you're going to be the assistant quarterback coach or something like that. And it's like you said, it's almost like a farm system where you get so much talent at the lower positions. It's like everyone just wants to go and coach for Bama, coach at Bama, because you know you're always going to have the most talent, the best setup. You're working for the greatest head football coach in all of college football history. I mean, there's just all of these things. And that's what they've built it into such a machine, not only with players, but with coaches, with the program, with everything, with culture. It just makes you wonder, will it ever stop? Mm-hmm. Will it just keep getting better and better and better and better every year? Because that's certainly what it is right now.
All right, Saturday night, LSU comes in. We'll get to the night part in a little bit. What kind of LSU team does Arkansas get?
That's going to be the key. You get a hungover team from the Alabama hangover, like everyone talks about.
Are they beat up? I mean, I don't know if they're beat up even.
I don't know. Or do you get a team that's really ticked off and wants to take some vengeance out on a poor Arkansas team? I mean, I don't know.
I don't know. Either way, I still think the talent gap is too big, too broad. If LSU wants to win this game 50-10, they can. If they want to win it 28-21, they can. I just don't. I would love to find a scenario where Arkansas can steal this, because you'd be stealing a victory if you got one. I just think the talent gap is still too wide.
But can it be competitive at least?
Well, I mean,
if they come in with a hangover,
is that where that's where we're at? I guess we're just hoping for competitive.
We are 2-7, 0-6.
You know, the more I thought, you know, we've talked about this bye week. Oh man, right in front of the LSU game. Man, if that bye week had been right in front of the Vanderbilt game, it would have made the difference. But after looking at it this year, bye weeks need to be placed in front of 50-50 games. This is nowhere near a 50-50 game.
Yeah.
This is a 90-10 game.
Even if you play your best game and LSU plays a so-so game, you're probably still not going to win.
Arkansas's home for the best sports talk. You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.
Adams with it at the 45. Adams skip it. Adams gets outside. Watch out. Hits the sideline. The Jet. Touchdown, Arkansas.
Go to the phone lines. Tom Murphy of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette joins us. Good morning, Tom. How was the bye weekend for you, my man?
It was a good weekend to recharge a little bit, watch some good football, hang out with the family. I enjoyed it, man. Hope all the listeners did too.
What was the best thing you saw this weekend? What was the moment of college football, or maybe even pro football? I know you're a big Falcons fan. What did you enjoy the most this weekend?
I enjoyed the Falcons crushing the Redskins yesterday. That's what I enjoyed.
Simple as that. Yeah, that was a great game. Kind of surprising.
Because
too,
so. The SEC games, you know, didn't live up to the billing. And I never thought the Bama-LSU game would. But I thought the Georgia-Kentucky game had a chance to. Both the games on Saturday were just kind of ho-hum in the end.
Yeah, they were kind of ho-hum. And yeah, I did think Kentucky would put up a better battle, but you know what? What Georgia and Alabama both are doing is they're getting better and better on defense. I mean, the reason people were concerned about Georgia is because they had so many newcomers on defense. And what Kirby Smart has done is that they've just improved themselves on a week-to-week basis. Look, think about the Alabama team that was here. Arkansas scored 31 points on them. Could have been more. If they'd called that helmet-to-helmet on Rakeem Boyd down there on the five, you know, maybe there's not a fumble on the next play, and maybe it's 21-14, and so on. But that Alabama team, Arkansas had a nice game plan against. They moved the ball against them, and they scored. And since that week, they've just increasingly gotten better to the point they're shutting LSU out on the road. And Quinnen Williams had a monster game against LSU. He was okay in this game. I thought the linebackers in the secondary just had mediocre to actually subpar games against Arkansas, but they've picked it up. Another SEC game that caught my eye, Missouri going on the road and beating Florida, a team that had beaten LSU early in the year.
Mm-hmm.
Missouri goes in and really handles them with ease, including losing some guys. So Arkansas's final three-game run is probably not going to be very easy.
No, it certainly isn't. And this game coming up against LSU, you know, it's always funny because when you look at the schedule before the year, you feel like Arkansas has gotten lucky in some cases and in some years where they've had to play LSU, where they coming off the game against Alabama. And some would even chalk up the game again in 2015 when Arkansas went into Baton Rouge and won that game, having the Alabama hangover. Do you feel like that could be the case this week? And not saying Arkansas would win, but could you see LSU maybe having a little bit of a hangover against Alabama and slipping up a little bit against Arkansas?
I very well could. And Danny Sheridan, who's come up here and talked a couple of times in the last few years, has a theory about how many times a year your team can really get up for a game. And he says it's somewhere around four or something like that. I mean, and play like at peak level. From an emotional standpoint. And I don't know if there's a ton to that, but there's no way that LSU is as locked in and focused on Saturday as they were on against Alabama last week. Another couple of factors at work here. The Ed Orgeron team 2 years ago, that's all the questions they heard all week. They had just come off another Alabama loss, and they were really focused in that game. In fact, that game up here in 16 was one of the worst performances that season for the Razorbacks, because Darius Geis, I mean, he had the 96 or 94-yard touchdown run. I think he ran for three on them, and Arkansas just wasn't in the game. And so Orgeron knows, I guess, what buttons to push to get a good performance here. But also, it's going to be, I think it's going to be in the 30s on game day. And that LSU team that came up here in 2014 to break the streak, they didn't look like they enjoyed playing in the super cold weather. So you never know, man. And I think Arkansas will have a better performance, a more focused performance coming off the bye week, and there'll be a chance.
Yeah, and you mentioned the fact that it's going to be a night game, 6:30, SEC Network, for those that that don't attend the game. What, how do you think that affects the crowd? You got modern gun season opening in our state. We all know how big a deal that deer hunting is to Arkansans. This season's 2-7, 6:30 start. What kind of expectation do you have early in the week on the crowd for Saturday night?
Man, I've miscalculated, I guess, maybe the intensity for some of these crowds. So, obviously, not going to be a sellout, I don't think. And I don't know if LSU fans are going to go out and gobble up tickets. Deer season plays a role. But at least it's not an 11 o'clock game. And we know that Hunter Yurecek basically asked the SEC, hey, can you lay off the 11 a.m. kickoff for us? And so that happened this time around. And the cold is going to impact it as well. So, but I would like to see more than that. Was it the last game? I mean, that Vanderbilt game was not that was not a good crowd.
Well, Tom, are you saying, I thought it was our petition that we put together was the reason why the game was not played at 11 a.m. It was Hunter Yurecek.
Oh, your petition?
Yeah, we put a petition together.
Yeah, we had over 5,000 signatures. That had to be it, right?
Clearly, those two items were the biggest impact on this. The decision by the SEC broadcast partner. Yeah,
there's no question.
Yeah, certainly that was the case. So, hey, Tom, I got a question for you. A few things that we talked about, obviously, over the weekend in college football. One of the things that I wanted to bring up was Bobby Petrino. Because at Louisville, he is 2-7, 0-6 in conference. He lost 77-16 against Clemson over the weekend, and there's been a lot of games like that. I don't know how much you've been paying attention to Louisville or Bobby Petrino, but what do you think has happened there? What, has he lost his edge? Has he lost his team? Because I never would have dreamed in a million years that Bobby Petrino would ever have a terrible football team, and he certainly has one this year.
Yeah, he does, and I keep up with the scores, and I don't get on the websites and read what's happening, you know, at Louisville. But I do know that, you know, the Brian Van Gorder is the defensive coordinator, and they're just giving it up. And they don't have a star at quarterback and Lamar Jackson factor. You know, that really propelled Louisville a few years ago when they were really good. And there's one other thing here. Bobby Petrino, this is his first time to be a fifth season anywhere. And he was prepared in 2012. It would have been his fifth season here, and it would have been a transition season. So we don't know what would have happened. Mm-hmm. But it does seem that the foundations are crumbling for him there, and I don't know all the reasons. I know that people have pointed to nepotism. What has he got, two son-in-laws on staff and Nick Petrino? And, I mean, that's got to be playing a role in, you know, how people perceive them, and maybe it has a role in recruiting. I don't know all the factors, but he's got to be on a very thin hot seat right now.
He might need to go get Willie Robinson out of the witness protection program to come back and help him with that defense, you know.
Man. Yeah, they're a mess right now. And, you know, the ACC, it's a quality conference. I mean, you got teams like Syracuse and North Carolina State who are playing above their heads a little bit. Virginia Tech down, but Miami down a little bit. But that's a solid league, no question.
Yeah. Well, Tom, another thing that happened, Kansas fired their coach, David Beattie. And we know that Jeff Long is the athletic director there at Kansas. So who would be the most entertaining hire and the biggest storyline for Jeff Long to make if he hired Houston Nutt, if he hired Brett Bielema, or if he hired Bobby Petrino at Kansas?
Oh, man, you guys are going to be eating up with that until there's a hiring. All those are fascinating, but can you imagine any of the three?
Not really.
I did see overnight on Twitter last night that Jeff Long started following Houston Nutt.
That's right. That's right.
Wow. And I also saw where he said, hey, I'm not calling out the fan base, but their football just isn't the end thing at Kansas. It hadn't been since the Mark Mangino years, it doesn't seem like, about 10, 11 years ago. So this is a difficult hire for Jeff Long, and he's got to improve on his track record down there for football, or up there.
Speaking of Kansas, and, makes you think of college basketball anytime the word Kansas is brought up, college basketball gets underway this week. Arkansas and Texas, just some of your early thoughts on the Arkansas basketball season, which kicks off this week.
Well, with this many newcomers, they're going to be a work in progress for weeks to come, I would think. The key is you got to be a better free throw shooting team. You got to make sure Gaffer touches the ball enough, and they got to play better defense. And I think there's a chance for the better defense component of that. And if that's the case, they could end up being a pretty solid team. But where they're picked in the SEC, 10th or 11th, whatever, where people picked them, I can't argue with that until, we see a lot more facets to what they're doing this season.
Well, Tom, I mean, Mike Anderson's never had a losing season in his coaching tenure. Is he going to be in danger of having that this year? Are they that type of team, and with the league being as good as it is?
Well, if some of the things I just talked about don't come together, and the SEC is a lot tougher this season. I mean, there's some really good teams out there. I guess it's a possibility. So, they better bring their defense this year, and they're going to have to. There's so many games where your free throw shooting is going to come into play, and so far they're not on a good track right there, and they've got a ways to go, I think, to be a really good team.
Yeah, it should be exciting at least to get a little change up from football, that is for sure. Tom Murphy of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, really appreciate you joining us as always, Tom. Great stuff. Catch up with you on Thursday, my man.
Sounds great, guys. See y'all.
Subscribe to the show on iTunes. You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.
Give is to Alex Collins straight up the middle, and Collins on the run. They won't catch him. Alex Collins is going to take it all the way to the house. Touchdown, Arkansas.
Go to the phone lines, PA's in Texarkana. What's going on, PA?
I hate to talk about this because this guy's a very good player. He may be the best player on the team, and he probably is the best player on the team. But I've seen him play well this year. I'm talking about Dre Greenwood. What has been his problem this year. A twisted ankle. He sits out the rest of the game.
Are you talking about Greenlaw?
Is he trying to save himself for
PA,
the NFL?
PA, who are you talking about right now?
I don't blame him. I don't blame him at all.
Who are you talking about?
Dre Greenlaw.
Okay.
Right. Greenlaw. I said Greenwood. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's where he threw it off. That's where he's thrown us. So, okay, so you're just asking about what?
Yeah, the linebacker that makes all the tackles when he's in the game.
Right. He's only played about, I don't know what the percentage is, but it seems like it's about 50% of the plays this year.
Yeah.
Because he's missed several games, missed consecutive games with that ankle injury. Now, I think that's a reasonable take, PA, is when you're asking about the injuries and what's going on with the guy. And but it is an ankle that continues to keep him off the field.
Well, I mean, they ask the coach, and maybe I just heard it wrong when I was listening to his press conference when Morris was giving his press conference. They asked him about Dre, and then first he said, well, it was an ankle, and then he said something about team rules or something, and why he didn't go back in the game. He said something to the effect of something about team rules. Maybe I mixed it up with another player. Did y'all guys hear the same thing that I heard when he said that?
Yes. Yeah, we did. And the thing is, PA, is that Chad Morris, as I'm sure you've noticed and I know that we have noticed, he keeps everything very close to the chest as far as if it's discipline or injuries or anything like that. He does not divulge very much. So it's a matter of, you know, I mean, what we don't know the extent of what it was, but yes, we do remember him saying that.
I just wonder if he questioned his intestinal fortitude. You know what I mean?
Well,
yeah, it was like I've seen Tyler Wilson play hurt quite a bit. You know, I've seen him get pelted at Vanderbilt and just, you know, stagger off the field and come back on the field and throw touchdown passes. I mean, you know, some guys can do it. Some guys can tolerate pain. Some guys can't. And some guys might have ulterior motives, like, you know, I'm good enough to play in the NFL, which I think he is. And I don't want to, you know, I'm not willing to risk myself for a 2-10 team and a new coach that I don't really know and apparently doesn't like that much. That's just my opinion. That's from afar. But I was just concerned about him because he makes plays that you know, other guys can't make, and it's just we miss him a lot out there. And I was just going to see what you guys thought about it.
Yeah, appreciate the phone call, PA. Yeah. And I mean, I think we all agree that it's completely different defense when Dre Greenlaw's not in the game,
and it leaves too much on Scooter Harris to try to pull the whole weight. Bumper Pool has come in his place and has done an admirable job for a freshman. But there is no substitute for Dre Greenlaw. And when you have Harris and Greenlaw healthy, both playing at a high level, this defense is a much different defense.
What happened when Dre Greenlaw went out in the Vanderbilt game? Bumper Pool got blocked up, and Keyshawn Vaughn took it 60-plus yards for a touchdown.
Yeah. Great point.
And it's
there's a definite drop-off. There's a reason Greenlaw's a starter.
Yeah, and you feel confident that Bumper Pool could end up being a really good player, but I mean, a true freshman, it's tough to make those adjustments, especially. But yeah, there's no doubt that it's a different team.
And I think Bumper Pool has played better in some of those games earlier in the year,
where you
knew going into the week, hey, Dre Greenlaw can't go, this ankle, and he had a week of preparation, a week of the reps. We talk about this a lot as quarterback, but we don't think about it so much in the other positions, where you're getting the coaching and the focus and the attention and being prepared as a starter. You know, for that Vanderbilt game, I'm sure Bumper Pool wasn't being prepared to be the starter. Although this coaching staff has to know at this point, it could happen at any moment with as tender as that ankle appears to be.
Yeah, and so if you're hoping that he's 100% healthy for this game too, that the bye week was helpful to him. I mean, they're having to deal with a lot of injuries right now.
He's one of two or three players on this team right now that you feel you can't win without that guy on the field for a bunch of snaps.
Is he the most important player on the field for Arkansas? Dre Greenlaw?
I don't know. Him or Story? I don't know.
Yeah.
I think there's like
even
three guys.
Boyd, man.
I think Boyd, Story, and Greenlaw, and I'd throw Harris in there too.
He's big as well.
Are all guys you've got to have. And there's some good defensive linemen, but it seems like there's a little more flexibility and versatility. They can rotate some guys around on that defensive line. I would just put those four down. The two linebackers, Ty Story and Rakeem Boyd, as guys you can't win without. I mean, it's just very difficult.
Well, and even if you look at those particular players, I think one of the reasons why we look at them as being so important is because we've seen what the team looks like with them and what the team looks like without them. And when they're without them, it's huge. The offense is stifling without Ty Story or without Rakeem Boyd. The defense is a completely different situation without Dre Greenlaw. So that's why it's important. I think that's why it was really important for this bye week to get a lot of these players healthy. And not only just Rakeem Boyd, but Devon Whaley. We don't know. We knew that Chad Moore said they hope to have him back in November. Now, we don't know if that means this upcoming week into November, or is that going to be Mississippi State or Missouri or whatever. So we're going to have to figure out that as well. But, you know, it's about getting a lot of these players healthy. And so that the bye week was beneficial in that regard. But there's no doubt that you're not going to do anything. You're not going to have anything. You're not going to be able to even move the ball against LSU unless you have some of your key players back. And Arkansas is definitely going to need all the help they can get about getting those players back from injury. Let's go back to the phone lines. Jared's in Russellville. What's going on, Jared?
Hey, good morning, guys. I have something to say about the Dre Greenlaw situation. And as much passion as he plays with, I have a hard time believing he would ever not want to be in the game. He's just a competitor. I know that he's been injury prone as his career, but when that guy on the field of our defense is completely different. He changes the whole.
Yeah.
He not only makes all the plays. He also calls out all the coverages.
Yep.
He's moving the defensive linemen that are out of position all the time. So that guy is not only an NFL player, but he's going to be probably one of the best linebackers that, well, in my opinion, ever played at Arkansas. So if he can be on the field, he bleeds Razorback red. There's no doubt in my mind. And I can't wait to see if we get his little brother up here as a quarterback from Olsen as well, because they if he has anything like his brother, can you imagine what he's going to be for our offense one day? Yeah. So I appreciate you guys. Y'all have a blessed day.
Yeah,
I appreciate
it. I can tell you, he was watching his brother Friday night.
Oh, yeah.
In their game. So he was there on his Friday night off.
Yeah, checking that out. Mm-hmm. Well, because, I mean, even if you look at Dre Greenlaw's stats, obviously against A&M, I think that was probably the most crucial game that he was playing in, where they held A&M to only 17 offensive points in that game. And he had 13 tackles. And then he had 13 tackles against Alabama, had 9 tackles against Tulsa. But then in the games like Ole Miss, where he didn't play the whole time, he only had 5 tackles. Vanderbilt, he only had 2 tackles. And of course, in Colorado State and North Texas, he didn't even play because of the injury. So there's no doubt that when he's in the game and he's healthy, it's huge. And, I mean, he makes a difference. He makes an impact. But, you know, that's the unfortunate thing about Arkansas, is that they have to rely so much on one player to be able to be competitive in a lot of these games, that when they're not in there, that's what happens. And that's when you lack talent. You lack depth. You lack all the things that we've been talking about. And I think that there's going to be some help on the way, and it's going to take some time. But, boy, those are the types of things that just reiterates our points, and the points have been made about this team having no real depth or talent on this roster.
How much was made this last week of Devin White being out for LSU for the first half? And the whole thing that you talked about was, boy, if you could just keep this game close in the first half, LSU would have a chance when they got him on the field. And it really didn't – I mean, it made a difference. It was 16-0 at the half at the Bama-LSU game. And the point I'm driving at is Greenlaw is kind of the Devin White of this defense. And I don't think you could keep a team within a couple of touchdowns the way LSU was able to. It was 9-0. They scored late, made it 16-0. That was a pretty admirable job by the reserves and the rest of the defense to lift everything up to keep it within striking distance – for the second half. Now, in the second half, they scored just about as many points, won the game 29-0. But, you know, in the end, I don't think if Arkansas misses a player like Greenlaw for a half for some reason due to injury or otherwise, I don't think you're going to see similar result. That's the difference in a team like LSU and a team like Arkansas and where we're at.
And also, I want to ask you this question, too. Was there anything that you saw in this Alabama-LSU game that changes your mind at all about the result or what the outcome will be of Arkansas and LSU this weekend, as far as what you saw before the game and what you're seeing after the game?
Changing a loss to a win?
Not necessarily that, but just as far as maybe some things that Arkansas...
Or a blowout to a competitive game?
Yeah, something maybe closer to that. Because I don't think I don't think Arkansas is going to win this game.
I just think the talent gap, particularly at the line of scrimmage, the talent gap is just too wide right now. I think if LSU wants to go out and win this game by 30 or 35, they can. If they dog it around a little bit, they'll win by 10 to 17 points.
Yeah. I don't know. You're hoping it can be at least.
You're going to have turnovers. For Arkansas to have a chance, Joe Burrow's going to have to turn it over. Brissett and those backs are going to have to put it on the ground. You're going to have something happen and give Arkansas some short fields that they capitalize on.
Mm-hmm.
And even if there's a turnover in the red zone and you get the ball at the 20 or 25-yard line, how confident are you that Arkansas is going to be able to punch it in and get 7 points out of the deal against that LSU defense?
Not confident at all.
Yeah.
I mean, I get a field goal maybe, but yeah, not confident at all.
Better get some pick sixes.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, hey, that helps, though.
And some special teams.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, that'll definitely help, though.
I think what we did see is how good Alabama is this weekend.
Yeah.
And when they're motivated, focused, and want to play.
They're not going to lose. They're not going to lose a single game. By the way, our fence man standings, Tommy took a commanding lead.
Yes, sir.
I tried to go with Penn State. Tried to mix it up a little bit. Just absolutely bit me in the butt. So,
hey, Penn State finally scored in that game.
Yeah, good. I guess Michigan's for real. I don't run
into Bennett. Did you see the end of that game? Did you see the end of that game?
No, I did not.
It's 42-0. And Penn State makes it wasn't really a circus catch. It looked like a pretty clean catch on the sideline. Harbaugh with like 2 minutes to go, maybe a little bit less, calls timeout to challenge the ruling of a catch on the field. Just another middle finger to Penn State.
I mean, are you surprised by this?
42? No, he concedes nothing.
Harbaugh revenge tour. I mean, they got clobbered by Penn State last year, clobbered.
Hey, he did not want them to score. He wanted to win that game 40, and they were so angry on the Michigan sideline when they scored that touchdown.
And if they beat Ohio State, then I guess they're going to be in the college football playoff. Yeah, that was crazy.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.